Hello, and welcome to Social Design Insights. I'm your co-host, Eric Kessel, and I'm here with my co-host, Emiliano Gandolfi.
Hello, excited to be here for a new episode.
We're continuing our discussion this week about design and inequality and the various methods that designers can use to challenge inequality through their practices. We have a very esteemed guest with us this week, whom Emiliano is going to introduce for us.
We're speaking today with David Barragán, that is one of the co-founders of a collective from Quito, Ecuador, that is called Al Borde. So Al Borde could be translated to something like close to the margin, close to the border. And I think this is a kind of philosophical statement of how their practice see their interest, where they're actually focusing in. David really caught our attention a few years ago when Al Borde was active doing a project that was called Esperanza, so Hope Project. They were mostly engaged in working in a fishing village in Ecuador. They have been doing a lot of other projects later, so we'll be focusing also on their other work. But David, just to start with, could you tell us a bit how this project with this fishing village started, and actually what was the philosophy behind it? Because I know that actually you started building a school for just $200, so with a ridiculous amount of money.
Hi everybody, it's a pleasure to be here and doing this interview with Eric and Emiliano. Esperanza's project is in the beginning a very innocent project, because the project began when we just finished the school 2 or 3 years before to the project. And in this moment, we don't have a clear view or clear intentions about what is to work with people, what is to work in a community, and what it means, all of that kind of projects and the transformation that a project like this could produce in a community. But little by little, the first project was built in 2009, the second project in 2011, the third project in 2013, and we are very close to the community. Little by little, we understand the power that an architecture project and a voluntary project has in a community like this, because in the first project, for example, we began only with participation of the community in the construction. The community found the materials and we called up our friends and everybody built in the beach. The second project, in order to design the second project, we realized that it could be better if we involve sociologists in the project in order to create a participatory process in the design decisions and also the participatory construction and all of that stuff. And then in the third project, we realized that the before projects were creating a transmission of knowledge of the community, and the fishermen began to experiment with their houses and the technologies and all of that stuff. So for us, it was very important to understand that if we want to create a real change in a community, we need to work in a long-term process. Long-term processes are very, very important, because all of this kind of knowledge transmission demands a lot of time to mature in the minds of the community and also in our minds.
How did you find a common language to speak with people that had no experience in building, and to get them enrolled in building structures that somehow are also ambitious?
It's quite easy, because when we are working in a community, the first condition of us is first trying to understand the different construction technologies, try to understand the materials with the local people. So this knowledge in the beginning is transmitted from them to us, and then we re-understand or reprocess all of this information with a design language or something like that. When we are talking with the people, not only in Esperanza's project, with any kind of people in a community and also in a private house, we are not talking like an architect with a complicated language. We are talking about, for example, the community. We are talking with them about their materials. in the same language, and we are trying to understand very specifically their methodologies of construction. We only change the design. The design is the plus in this kind of process. There are not any kind of difficulty in the language with the people. For example, if we are in the coast, we are building with bamboo and wood and elevated in pillars and pitched roof made of any kind of straw. If we are in the highlands, we are building with earth and stuff like that. So it's the same language.
David, several of these projects have become pedagogical opportunities, and you've gotten students involved throughout their coursework. Could you tell us a little bit about that experience and what it has meant both to the community and the students to be involved in these sorts of projects?
When we finished the school, when we graduated, our school has a program to call the best students to be part of the faculty staff. And we began to teach very early. I began to teach in the university when I was 26 years. Always for us was important to try to understand that the academy, the education, it's very important to have an impact in the society change. So when we began to teach year by year, we realized that the academy was completely disconnected to the reality, to the society. And we began to explore different ways to connect us as teachers to the society and to connect our students to the society. Then we began to create all of kind of programs and spaces to open to students to be part of this experience, because we don't have any kind of master degree or PhD degree. We, after graduating to the school, we began to work, and we learn in practice. We learn with our hands, working with the people, trying to understand the materials, always facing the practice in a constructive and real way. So when we began to have a philosophy of work in our office, and when we decided that we want to transmit this, want to transmit all of this information, this knowledge to our students and to the communities, because in the communities it's really good to work like this, because they have lots of knowledge of construction. They are self-builders in ever.
And I find that point really interesting. I think when people go into marginalized communities and start to design and build, from the external, it appears as a resource-poor environment. And I think that one of the things that's always stood out to us about your practice is that it goes in and acknowledges and embraces and extracts the resources that are there. That is the building knowledge, the local materials, things like that. What would you say about that as potentially a new or revisited means of design and construction, you know, rather than the sort of post-industrial model of, you know, manufactured building components and stuff, but rather basing a design and build scheme on the resources that are already present in a community?
Maybe it's important to understand our context, because we are a product of our context. In our context, we don't have a high industrialized construction process or something like that. We are not a high-tech country. We are a country in the middle of two bigger countries, Colombia and Peru, and we always sometimes be a little bit in the border of the development and all of that stuff. So in Ecuador, we always work in a very, very handcraft way. So for us, but the education always looks to the other way, always looks to, I don't know, parametric options, always look to something more high-tech and ambitions. The final ambition is all of that stuff. But when we finished the school and we began to face the practice, what was difficult for us was understand the way that is the construction market in Ecuador. So we don't have any kind of big problems now, because everything is more handmade, you know what I mean? And for us, it's really nice because we understand really good how to approach to the artisans on how to approach to the to the workers and take advantage on all of these conditions that we have specifically. Yeah, we don't have a discussion about post-industrial process and all of that stuff because we never be an industrial society.
Well said, David. And I think this notion of the handmade has lessons even for those of us who do live in highly industrialized societies. We've got to take a short break. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back with more from David Barragán of Alborde. You're listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel and Emiliano Gandolfi. Thank you for listening to Social Design Insights. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Currie Stone Foundation and the Currie Stone Design Prize. Each week, we strive to bring you the voices of leading practitioners of social interest design from all fields. For 10 years, the Currie Stone Design Prize has been seeking, finding, and celebrating emerging practices in socially minded design. For further information on this episode, the show, or social design, please visit our website at curriestonedesignprize.com. On the website, you can find all sorts of fun stuff. You'll find documentary videos of all the past winners of the Currie Stone Design Prize, as well as narratives for all Currie Stone Design Prize winners and Social Design Circle members. There's multiple galleries of photos for your use, as well as links for further research.
Welcome back to Social Design Insights. We're here with David Barragán, one of the four co-founders of Alborde, that is speaking with us from Quito in Ecuador. We have been addressing with David the larger issue of can design challenge inequality. On the same issue, we have been interviewing also Emily Pilliton from Project H, John Peterson from Public Architecture, both from the US, Giancarlo Mazzanti from Colombia, and in the next episode, we will be issuing an interview with Active Social Architecture from Rwanda. So please, check also the other episodes of the series on curriestonedesignprize.com. David, going back to our interview, you were just telling us about how Alborde could take advantage of working in great proximity with communities and in creative collaboration with artisans and workers. I think this approach has shown to be very effective in housing rehabilitation projects as the one that you're currently doing in Quito. Could you please tell us more about this project?
The project is very personal because we rent a house in the heritage area of Quito. It's a very cheap area. Suddenly we realized that the owner of the house doesn't want us in the house and we need to find another house. When we face this problem, we always take advantage of the situation and we decide to create a project of this problem. We don't have an office. It's impossible that we are trying to find a new place to rent. So we began to understand the possibility to have a new office designed and built for us with no money. And then we contact to a guy that we met a couple of years before, and we said, okay, you have an inhabited house. Nobody lives here. It's a big problem in the area because sometimes the thieves go inside and all of that stuff, or sleep there, homeless sleep there, and it's a problem. And also you have the dream to rebuild this house, to rehabilitate this house. We are designers. We can build by ourselves. What if we create a win-win project and you pay us in the beginning with the rent of our office? And next, we began to create the whole project and we asked an economist to understand the numbers of the project. And in the end, the second phase was our intern's house. Next, Esteban's house. Esteban is one of the Alborde partners. Next, Malu's house is the one of Alborde partners too. Malu's house was built in association or in cooperation with Chicago Biennial. Next, the house of the owner. And now we are building maybe the last, or not sure, intervention with a Tokyo University collaboration. So It's an exploration of us when we face that we need a space and we don't have money and we need to be very resourceful with the materials and resources that we have at hand in the house. So it's the way that we recycle the house. Also, we began to connect more kind of projects that we have always in our mind. For example, it's the first intentions of our program of academy or own academy. For example, we began to create different kind of programs of construction programs or summer construction programs or something like that. It works really well. Many people come to abroad to be part of this construction experience. Also, we run a project that we call FMAE, that is in English, is a parody of the IMF, International Monetary Fund, that in Spanish is Fondo de Materiales Inservibles, is like and useless materials found, because we began to talk with our friends that we are working in a different project in construction to donate us all of the material that they are not using or changing in the projects. And we began to have a bigger stock of materials. This house also works as an opportunity to consolidate us as a firm, as a project, architecture project, because we now live as a community here. We have the house of our interns. We received 4 interns for 6 months from January to June and July to December, and they have house and lunch in our space. And now, indeed, we don't call them interns, we call them residents. Is our program of residency, like the residence programs in art. We have this program completely open to everybody who want to come. We select from around 40 portfolios for each term. We try to don't have any kind of hierarchy, so everyone cook, and also we have a schedule to clean the kitchen. And also it was opportunity to face us and understand what is better for us, to work more hours a day or work on weekends and be proud to sleep under the desk. Because there are a lot of architects that are very proud of that never stop to work. We are trying to find a good way to live, so our interns live here. Maybe it's important to reduce our work days. So since 2 years ago, we work 4 days a week. This was very, very, very great for us because it's an opportunity to reset our mind in a weekend of 3 days.
I have the impression that you're really using minimal resources in the best way. So it becomes almost a working outside the market economy as a kind of political act. You are working mostly with found material. You're refurbishing houses by yourself that you will be using by yourself. So in a way, you're finding a new balance that goes beyond the normal market economy, but it's creating your own conditions for creating a certain level of well-being.
Yeah, we are completely agree and totally agree. I think all of these years we are working together since 2007. And day by day, we are trying to create our world with our rules. Little by little, we understand that all of these steps are a political act. We are completely out of the but we're always trying to be out of the system, but not in an anarchy way. We are just trying to find the best conditions to be happy, and to be happy not in the hippie way, to stay happy and to go happy to the all the Mondays are a good day for us. We are going to work and enjoy the time that we stay there. And all of that philosophy, it was because suddenly we realized that this is our life. In the beginning, we never wanted to have an office, to run an office. It just happened. So we are a construction, our mind, our philosophy was thinking under construction always. We are always under construction. We are anti-dogmas. We have a living in a constant reality. Our face to practice is completely real. We are not facing the practice from the theory or from the academy. We are facing the practice in a real conditions, and sometimes the conditions are really, really hard. So we can be dogmatic because we are citizens who has a work, and our work is to solve necessities. So we need to be very, very pragmatic and always construct our way of thinking.
I have a last question. Maybe Eric has another last question, but I just wanted to know, because you've been also working quite a bit in informal settlements and working with informal communities. So I was wondering, what is the most important lesson that you learn in this kind of context?
The most important lesson is that everybody has something to teach you. When we are working in these places, it's a big place to learn. We learn a lot in these places, yeah. All of the techniques that we know, more and more of the techniques are learned in this area. And for us, it's really, really great. It's a great space to learn. Maybe it's the best academy for us.
David, you mentioned practicing from necessity and not beginning with theory and not practicing for the academy or anything like that. And I think that's a beautiful statement and reflects my own values about practice. And I think that, you know, all over the world, there's this gulf between practice and the academy. And I think architecture has always struggled to take what we know from the field, to take what we know when we're working with our hands and our feet and our neighbors, and somehow translate that into like a pedagogy, into, you know, something academic. What have you learned about, you know, in the course of your teaching about how to communicate the wisdom of the field to your students?
I'm going to answer with an example of our last architecture studio in the university. Now we can teach in the universities of Ecuador because we don't have a master's degree or PhD degree. But there is a school 2 hours from Quito. The area is a very, very commercial area, and they call us as an invited teachers. We propose to create an studio where the students face the practice building with their hands. But the school is 2 hours from Quito, so it's quite difficult for us to involve these students in a social process and build something to any community. So we decide to give one more step in our teaching methodology and try to transmit exactly what we are doing in our office with the students. In our office, we are building for us. We are building this house for us with our interest, and we're building our space with our conditions. What if the students has the opportunity to build something that they really like? And we propose the students to choose something that they really like. For example, these are one of the building project. We don't have any problem with the scale, function, typology, everything. For us, it doesn't matter. We only want to build with our students something that they want. One of the guys said, I like architecture and music. I'm a hip-hop MC. In my city, it's quite difficult to record one of my songs because it's too expensive and we don't have any opportunities to have a good studio. I was doing a quick research and it's possible to create a homemade studio. So the project of the student was to design and build his hip-hop studio. At the end of the semester, he built it. And the last time that I saw him, he was record his first disc with his brother, and also he's recording music from his friends, and he's creating a space for the city to promote alternative music. So for us, architecture is a tool of struggle, is a tool of transformation. We think we are doing something really good for our students, for them, and also for us, because our teaching methodologies are changing in this case. We never thought before this architecture studio that it will be possible to build with the students something out of the community facilities.
That's amazing. Thank you for that story. And unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I feel like we could talk for another hour. So thank you, David, for sharing with us your time and your wisdom and your inspiration.
Thank you so much, Eric. Nice to meet you. Nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much, David. It was really exciting to speak with you again. I think that the work of Alborde is really expanding the role of the practice, and it's really showing how with minimal resources you can create impact. And I think that's a huge lesson that we should be learning in any kind of projects, in any kind of situation, because being reflective to the specific local context is a fundamental aspect, I think, of doing a good architecture. So thank you again for sharing with us this really insightful words, and I hope we'll be in contact soon again.
Thank you, Emiliano. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
You've been listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel and Emiliano Gandolfi. We'd like to thank our guest of the week, David Barragán of Alborde. For further information on Alborde's work, please visit our website at currystonedesignprize.com. There you'll find galleries and useful links to all of Alborde's projects. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Curry Stone Foundation and the Curry Stone Design Prize. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for regular updates on all of our past guests and winners.